Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
All right, everyone.
Are we okay mentioning numbers?
Always okay mentioning numbers. Okay. Welcome back, everyone, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Holy cow. We made it. We made it to the new.
We've already started. Office.
We've already started. I'm kind of a live guy, you know that. Did you want to talk about things and like?
Yeah, man. I was going to. I've already got it all written down.
T-Bone's got a list.
Well,
over
perfect.
Here.
Then I'm gonna let you lead anyway.
Yeah. So, all right, everybody. I've got a special program for everybody. It's a proud day for me. I've got to be honest with you. I have a almost like a little brother here in Sully, almost like a big brother here in Rick.
I was thinking you were more the granddad here.
And today is the grand opening of Sullivan Dental Partners' long-term vision of their new building. And I want to talk about how we got here, the process, what steps have been part of this along the way. You know, because a lot of times what happens is we don't recognize the steps of the journey until we reach a destination because we don't know what we're doing as we're doing it.
Right.
It isn't until we get to the end that we can take a look back and see what we've done. But to give everybody some context, this is how crazy this weekend is. They closed their office on Friday.
A week ago.
Yes. Today is Thursday.
Yeah, we're good. Okay.
Yeah, we need help with what day it is right now.
I came in yesterday, which is a Wednesday, and they're moving into the new building, which is a couple hundred feet away, which makes it a little bit easier. They have a photo shoot going on. We're setting up the training center, and we're hosting two classes on Thursday, Friday, and then another one on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all on the same weekend. The building is a beautiful. It's 11,000 square feet dedicated to dentistry. It houses three unique things in here. We house a general dental practice on the first floor. We house a surgical center designed for large case surgical dentistry on the second floor. And we house a conference room training center on the second floor as well. So there's some unique aspects of that that maybe doesn't apply to everybody. But what I want to do is that we work on building the dream. And the overall message, I think, is sometimes we hold our dreams back because of flexibility issues. And if we test and experiment and prove the concept before we start building, we can then find that we can execute our dreams at a higher level. So before we talk about the building, let's take a step back, and we are joined by Dr. Rick Sullivan, which is Richard Sullivan III, correct?
Correct.
And before Sully talks, we don't want Sully to talk at all yet. Rick, give us your story briefly, okay, about you as a dentist pre-Sully.
Got out of school in 1988.
Okay.
My dad was killed in a hunting accident in 1987, my senior year in dental school.
And your dad was a dentist?
Dad was a dentist, had a very successful practice. In 1987, he had three assistants, three hygienists, working out of six chairs.
Wow. Linda, by himself.
By himself.
That's crazy.
In Linda Miles' first book, she referred to my dad as the rabbit on roller skates. When she talks about the way different dentists work, okay? I get it, honestly, Sully.
Yeah, I was going to say, this explains a lot, actually.
Anyway, when I got out of dental school, some of my father's friends, study club people, had kind of kept the practice going by volunteering their time. And I spent most of my senior year up here actually working in the practice under their guidance, which means they were reading the paper in the office and I was practicing.
Mm-hmm. To keep the practice going
for
when you came out.
When I actually graduated. So I brought the practice, actually about half of it, had a partner by the other half. We were together for 2 or 3 years, and he kind of went his own special ways, and that was an amicable thing. So I bought the building that we were currently just left in 1993 and grew it from two hygienists, one assistant, up to, when Sully got there in 2015, I had five chairs, three hygienists, two assistants, two up front, and I was running about $1.5 million a year.
By yourself?
By myself. I offered oral sedation, did everything except any kind of orthodontics.
Okay.
Oral sedation, I did all my third molars, always have. Offered Lanap. I restored implants. I'd dabbled in placing them years ago, but frankly, I'd gotten so busy that I had time. I struggled to make for the scheduling, which where a lot of the stuff we've done now with the block scheduling stuff has fixed all that. I really needed an associate probably 7 or 8 years before Sully got out of school. But at the time, I was concerned with how am I going to split my practice? How's this going to work? How am I going to divide the practice in half? Really had no idea exactly what that was going to look like other than my son's graduating in 3 months. So we went down to the Hinman in March of 15, ended up coming back with 8 chairs, 8 operatories, remodeled the office, and he got out of school in June. And we started, and we just kind of started working together, and he started implementing ideas.
So I think that's a good place. So that kind of gives us the story of where we got, you know, where we were at, okay? So you're in 2,700 square feet. You had grown it to 8 operatories by adding walls here and there. You bought all new equipment because you had your son going in with you. And you were doing about 1.4, 1.5 million in collections, which is an amazing number.
But I was also burnt out.
Yeah.
He will tell you that.
Yeah, you were working hard.
I was working hard.
It's amazing how, like, his growth, looking back, was so stunted by busyness.
Yeah. And I'll talk about this at DS World a little bit, but it's some of us substitute busyness instead of business. Mm-hmm. And it's a single letter change, but it's a big difference. So what was your fear about bringing in, let's not, just call it an associate. It happens to be your son. What was your biggest fear there?
How am I going to split it up? How am I going to still make my monthly payments? How am I going to make my mortgages and my monthly commitments by suddenly having half the, you know, and technically half the patients, half the workload? What's it going to look like?
Okay. And would you say that a lot of your contemporaries and colleagues face that same fear and challenge?
I'd be shocked if they didn't.
Yeah. And I think the main difference there was you felt a level of force because it was your son, correct?
On some level, exactly.
Yeah. So it's not like you could say, maybe I just won't do an associate because, you know, you have a number one, you're third generation dentist. There's Richard Sullivan the first, Richard Paul Sullivan the second, mm-hmm. Richard Sullivan the third, and there should be Richard Sullivan the fourth all in the same, you know, in the same practice. There's no reason for Sully to go somewhere else. What was Sully's first 6 months and year like? How did he enter into the practice? Was it very similar to probably what most associates do?
I would say so. Basically, we had him start checking hygiene. And he started out in August of that year.
Diagnosing
every etch. Probably did over 100 MODs or two surface fillings that August. More than he'll ever do again in his life total. And we would sit every afternoon in the office and kind of co-diagnose cases. We would take photographs. We would take x-rays. And we'd go up and
that was huge.
On some level, he let me mentor him. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, this is what you did. We would, I would open up a class two or whatever and take an intraoral photograph, and he would do the same thing. He would say, okay, where's the decay? Did you get it all? Should you have done a crown there? That's why you got a pulp exposure. That's why you didn't. Let's walk through the day, almost a debrief.
And how much time did this take?
30 minutes, maybe?
Yeah.
We would do it during the day. We need to make more of that time now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll both tell you that.
Because we're doing it again. You know, the building robbed a lot of time this past year with Megan, and she's been a trooper because a lot of our mentoring that we would have liked to have done, we haven't done as much, but we have to get back at that now with the fourth doctor coming in.
So, again, I'm sitting here talking to Dr. Rick Sullivan and Sully Sullivan, and we're talking about their journey over the last 5.5, 6 years from being a solo practitioner to into a new 11,000-square-foot building now. And I think what you just said, Rick, is so important, is that you forced a debrief on a daily basis to calibrate each other.
Calibrate's a really good word.
And to mentor Sully about the culture, your clinical. You see, there's two cultures in a practice. Mm-hmm. There's a business and personal culture. In other words, you know, whether you're fun, whether you wear white coats or don't wear white coats.
Exactly.
Whether you're in scrubs, whether you shaved every day, whether you're a tie.
Whether you had a man bun.
Yeah, man. You know, whether, you know, just the culture. Like when somebody walks into your office, they sense a culture from how your team treats everybody, the personality. Okay, have your practice. And then there's a clinical culture. Are you just letting patients dictate what type of treatment you do? Or are you diagnosing ideal dentistry? Are you over-diagnosing dentistry? There's a clinical culture. And that time of spending 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes each day, that first 3 to 6 months, is formative of establishing a clinical culture. Formative. And I think a lot of times we say, oh, I'll get to that, or we'll get there when so-and-so takes time off my plate. And it's probably too late at that point. And that's super important. Okay. So Sully was doing, why do you guys laugh about how many MODs he was doing at the very beginning?
Because he wasn't calibrated.
Okay.
And he'll tell you he was diagnosing every etch. He was trying to be busy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, the calibration led to, we started planning. Okay, here's your case tomorrow. How are you going to prep this tooth? What's it going to look like? Okay, this is extraction. Are you comfortable doing this? Okay, let's try it. You'll do it. But, Dad, you're here.
What happened, too, was I would, I was diagnosing every – I wasn't – in dental school, it's like if there was any sort of triangle that was an enamel, it was like that needs a filling. And so understanding, being able to look back at stuff and know is it changing, is it not changing, mm-hmm. has it crossed the DEJ – and then the other laughter part of it is that, 25-30% of those fillings that I did in July and August, I was redoing in September and October, because you just don't know.
Well, tell me more about that. Tell me more
great
about
technique.
Why would they need to be redone? I mean, you're not even seeing them on recall yet.
Well, right. I know. That's just seeing the ones that were supposed that were sensitive, right? So, I think for me, one of the biggest things I struggle with out of the gate, and it's been so funny being now in the opposite position of having, new doctors come work with us, is one, there's just the sensitivity of having good bonding protocol and keeping things isolated and stuff like that. I when I got out, I was like, well, I don't want to use a rubber dam anymore. And, I don't want to use any isolation, and understanding just the importance of that. And then the bigger one, which I still see today that, impacts all of us so much on a daily basis, is just occlusion. I had no idea what kind of ramifications a high filling could have on a patient. And these patients would come in, they'd have no symptoms. I'd tell them they needed a DO. 3 MOs or DOs, whatever. I do them, and next thing you know, they're hurting, they're calling back, and I'm like, what am I doing? I would go in there, and I would look at it. We'd take an x-ray. Everything would look great. I may even redo it, and I'm like, what the heck am I doing? They're still hurting, and then Dad would go in there and mark it. They'd have them go into, excursive, mm-hmm. Or
wait, what's that?
I know, right? Some sort of other movement than just biting down directly on the
while
paper.
While you're numb.
And I would start to see these marks and see things. And then I would see oh my gosh, the patients would just a light bulb went off of that fixed it. It feels better now, and then those things. And we still see that, how I was very quick. Megan was very quick. Jackson's being very quick to be like, I think this tooth needs root canal. you know, because they're responding to symptoms post-treatment. It's like, well, no, not necessarily. It's just because there may be some other factor to it. So that's the laughing part, is how many of those, you know, and there were times where dad had to redo them, right? I would lose patient confidence. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at if I didn't have someone who was willing to kind of work with me through that, those periods of me not being that clinically, you know, good. Right. Yeah.
But also, Sully was not afraid to come and ask for help. And that's a big deal. Say, hey, I can't find this canal.
Oh, I'd be in the middle of a root canal and be like, well, I either refer it out or I go refer it to my partner or, you know, boss.
Or stuck on a root tip or can't get a patient numb. And rather than sit there and just spin his wheels, it became a teaching moment.
Yeah, and he wouldn't shame me either. Like, sure. What were you thinking getting into this molar root
canal?
Which is,
by the way, unique, because it's not unique in the traditional owner-associate relationship, but it's maybe unique in the dad-son relationship. Now, I want to step back for a second, Rick, because this is, as you were telling the story, it hit home because I've dealt with this, and I know a lot of our listeners have dealt with this, is you're busy doing dentistry. Like your own patient base, your own everything. And here we got Yahoo over here, you know, doing diagnosing every little thing and doing it and maybe not doing it well. How'd you even know this was happening? Did your team come to you? What was that dynamic like?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Well, part of it is we were in a 2,000 square foot building, so you kind of knew when somebody took a deep breath.
Okay.
You know, I would have teammates. Sully would come to me and say, hey, I'm concerned about this. Sometimes some teammates would say, hey, ask him about this patient, or the patients would call back and say, hey, you know, I'm sensitive, or just trickle down things. Wanted a pulse on your practice, because right. I'm concerned, who is this person now that's suddenly treating my patients that, you know, that my dad saw, that I saw, that some of them saw my granddad, so they're family patients to me. And that's something I still have
struggle with
on some level sometimes.
What advice would you give the non-father-son person listening about how to handle that period of bringing in the new dentist associate first 6 months?
Stay in their lane.
Okay.
They're a doctor. They're graduated. They have a license. They need to do what they feel comfortable with. Try not to do anything that's irreversible. And let them learn. The experiences where I had to come in and find a root canal, get a root tip out, get somebody numb, whatever, those are the most valuable learning lessons.
Well, and it's funny because even now with Megan, like I kind of have a unique situation in that I was the associate not very long ago, right? And now I get to be on the other side a little bit. And, you know, with Megan, especially over this past year, because she's now been in a year as an associate with us, you know, there were moments where, like, your dad kind of, I think, has forgot a little bit of when I was so brand new, and he'll want to jump in. I'm like, hey, you know, we got to let her fail.
Yeah, we got to make it safe to fail.
Right. And not in a way of like, if she, like,
catastrophic failures.
Bingo. Right. Yeah. But like, we got to let her try this material or work through this. We got to let her, because if we just tell her everything, she'll never.
It's adversarial then.
Correct. Exactly. And I think that's been huge because what happens, they come around. And they come around to some stuff, and guess what? We come around to some stuff, you know, because we even him doing it 30 years, you doing it as long as you have, and me doing it now for, you know, a little bit of time, you can't be afraid to learn something from someone that's new. And so, you know, she's taught us things or, you know, introduced new concept or new ideas that we've even implemented, you know, by having that kind of open-minded of like, hey, I'm willing, let's have this willingness to learn from each other.
Yeah. Well, you know, you stay in your lane, stay in your hula hoop, and don't try to micromanage and microcontrol everything. Be available when asked for help, but don't try to jump in there places where you're not.
What would you have done if Sully didn't ask for help? Because I've been in that situation where they're not asking for help. Well, and I know a lot of my colleagues have been in that, our colleagues have been in that situation where they don't have somebody asking for help.
At some point, every dentist is going to hit a rock bottom type scenario where they're going to need some help on something. Okay, they're going to have a patient that leaves, a patient that's upset. You know, worst case scenario, they're going to have a patient that files a lawsuit or does some like a peer review thing. So, I mean, you've got to be willing to let, you know, you don't want it to go to that, and hopefully they're not doing that kind of stuff. That's a little bit extreme, but they really have to kind of, the same way if I'm a solo practitioner and open up by myself, I'm going to have to work my way through things.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is that is like, the dad, because he was my dad, did he allow me to fail more than typically we would let someone else fail on our own patients? And did that show us a light or give us help? And now with someone who's not a Sullivan, letting her fail more because we kind of saw the, it's like, because it's hard for me to like to know, like, well, how much are you letting your associates fail or micromanage? Right. Or are they just really not asking for help?
But I think it's,
I think it's more than not asking for help.
I don't,
or the ones I've struggled with aren't asking for help. And because maybe, I do believe in autonomy.
Maybe we're doing a good job too of like making that like being upfront with saying like
culture.
The number one,
you're making a culture.
Right, the number one thing I need from my associate is I need them to be able to ask for help and willingness to
be teachable.
If you could be teachable,
but I think that starts with also the fact that you guys are all in the same private office.
It's a very unique thing that a lot of dentists don't do.
You know, like we're all in our, we're all together.
But right? A lot of practices, the lead doc has their own private office and all the associates are in like a.
And that's not, I don't think that's a great culture. All right. So.
But you have, the doctor has to make it, the lead doctor has to make it safe for when the associate and the junior doctors do need help. It needs to be a welcoming, comforting type environment.
Not a dental school environment.
Absolutely. And the problem is so many of us come out of dental school, we're so jaded.
We want to have that. What do fraternities do? The hazing period,
exactly.
Or that that teasing period, or you know that grand rounds mentality where you're just kind of testing everybody. And
but it's so easy to react. Yeah. It's so easy for when that new doc comes in, and they're like, I just perfed the molar, and you've got a phone call, the patient pissed off, you got to go check hygiene, you got a patient numb in the chair waiting for
and
the
you're
ground.
Busy and you're like, right. God, where am I going to put this patient
and now,
in my schedule?
And I'm like, dadgummit, what the heck were you doing the molar?
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy to snap and react like that, and then you kill that trust and whatnot. So I think that's the hard part, is when that happens, being able to say, you know, make it a teachable moment and not react like that.
The other thing that we've learned is we put the most experienced assistants, the most trained assistants, with the younger doctor. And we tell the younger doctor, I understand you're a doctor.
Did Sully tell you that idea? Because he probably stole it from me. I'm just kidding.
No, that was a dad idea.
The younger doctor needs to understand, if Darlene gives you an instrument, use it.
Yeah.
Because she's seen me do that wisdom tooth 8,000 times, and she knows that instrument is the key to getting this out. You may have never seen it before. Do something with it.
Yeah,
you know, and be willing to let.
And he had to sacrifice that. The assistant that he used for 20 years was the assistant I had, and she's now with Magna.
You know, and we do that in our office as well. Is that we put in our office is Whitney number one. We try to put them with our associate as much as possible, and then I like working with the other assistants as well, because the side benefit of that is you're training them up. Mm-hmm. You're getting to see where they're weak, where they're not as strong, any number of things. And then the other thing is when we do flip-flop assistants, you know, like I start thinking like, okay, why was she not handing me this? Or why was she doing this? And it gives me an opportunity to talk to the dentist. Hey, I noticed that when we were bonding something, like
you didn't use a bonding agent.
You know, or you, the bonding agent was sitting out from before when the patient came in, you know, and it just
They're blowing water. They're washing off the bonding agent.
Any number of
silly.
Things, right? Yeah. Nothing that egregious in my office, but it gives me that ability. I think as a senior doc, it's good for me to as much as I complain about having to do basic dentistry, there's some benefit of me seeing how that's being done in our practice as a business owner. But I think this is a good opportunity to keep moving along the timeline here, okay? So we had a fear of bringing Sully in. We didn't have much of a choice, okay? So that's a unique and blessing to you guys that you didn't have a choice because let me ask you this. Would you be where you're at today without having brought him in?
Absolutely not.
Okay. And you think that's because he's your son? Well, I think part of that is because he's your son, but I think ultimately you would definitely be in a better place having had anyone with you at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually bypassed up a phenomenal associate, young doctor, mm-hmm. young lady doctor, probably several years prior because I was waiting for him. But I look back now, knowing what I know, she could have come on, grown the practice, hired her, and then we'd have been even more ready for him. Yeah. And we'd have been out of that building a lot sooner.
It's interesting you say that. So I want to talk about that, and then we'll move on to the next section here is we're dealing with that in a couple of people in our mastermind. They're like, I've got a third-year dental student. They're from here. They want to move here. I'm going to wait a year. I'm like, you're going to struggle for a year for somebody that may or may not come? Like, you never knew. Sully may have met a beautiful woman and moved somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he met a beautiful man. I don't know. I mean, I don't know Sully at that time, but I'm sure he's been a woman. Yeah. And move somewhere else. And here you would have held yourself back. And I think the other point, which we're going to get into because it proved true on the back end of this, is that bring somebody in and test the waters. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think when we talk about Magna, that'll be a good time to talk about that. So you had this fear of, essentially, what most people think of bringing the associate in is you cut your practice in half, okay? How did you guys get past that fear? Because to a certain degree, you're landlocked and your building is only so big, okay? You know, it's not necessarily like you're doing a lot of marketing at that time. Were you doing any marketing?
Random little thing.
Essentially nothing.
Yeah, Civic Club.
But Yellow Pages were out by then, right, yeah. Rick?
Yeah, I had a web page. You know, our website is TennesseeDentist.com, so I got that in like 95. Yeah. So we've been early adopters.
So what got you past that fear of cutting your income and going there? Walk us through, and what I'm trying to get through here is the value of technology and procedural growth and CE in that and what that looked like.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Well, I've always been sort of a CE junkie and always try to realize that investing in myself, which is one of the things that we teach, is your best investment. You know, I'm betting on me.
Yeah.
he went and took 6 months miles before he graduated. So he's in 6 months miles continuum with a bunch of dentists. It was kind of funny. They're like, oh, well, how's your practice? Well, I'm still in school. So when he got out of school and started offering orthodontics.
And you weren't doing orthodontics in your practice.
But to long-term patients that I tried to send to the orthodontist for years, next thing you know, he's got 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 cases going. I'm sitting back going, wow, this is kind of crazy. So that part of the practice started building. He went and did the CEREC doctor's courses real quick to get up to speed because we were CEREC practice. And he pushed me to get more into CEREC, okay, not just single crowns, to the point where I don't think we moved any impression trays over in the move. Maybe
that's a lie.
I hit a few.
I tried.
We scrolled some away. But it wasn't like we had a lull time where he wasn't suddenly, you know, improving the bottom line. It's like, wow, this is working. I'm busy. Because suddenly now I was able to begin to do the things I wanted. And he was starting to pick up the hygiene checks and the restorations and the general dentistry. All of a sudden, I'm going to do more wisdom teeth, more sedation, more Lanap. At that point, he's like, Dad.
And these patients are in your practice.
Oh, all over the place.
Yeah, so if you don't mind, Sully, I think that's a good exit point for us to talk a little bit about that part of it. I think sometimes people, what we're learning through our mastermind and working with more dentists now, is people don't realize that there's a opportunity cost that fillings and crowns and general busyness,
right,
hygiene checks, even in this case, even if you're doing wisdom teeth is costing you Lanaps or whatever it may be, right? Talk to us about, looking back, how you see the opportunity cost and what you would tell other dentists about what your dad was just talking about.
Well, I saw it early on, I guess, with him, you know, because I saw that he had a super robust skill set and that he was surgically was really, really good, right? He was doing his own all fully impacted third molars. And I'm like, dude, if you're doing this, why aren't you placing implants, right? And, you know, you saw, hey, it was the challenge with him was he was so busy doing fillings and crowns and there was no block scheduling. It was the scheduling of just, you know.
It was his dad's schedule?
What
fits. I got six chairs. I'm just going to run it.
It was just, you know, and we train our team members
to fill the schedule
in the worst way possible, which is we train them to make sure that schedule is full. And so, well, what do? They just keep it full. So the schedule's always full, which is great, but it's filled with the wrong stuff.
As a side note, I want to make sure we have this conversation with our mastermind group this weekend because some of them are starting to see that as they've implemented photography, that they're with the general, you know, some slowdown in their practice, they're worried. And I want to talk about the risk, the right. negatives of pushing fill the schedule.
Because I leave blocks open now. Yeah. You know, to the last minute. But anyways, yeah, so for me, mindset-wise, Dad and I are kind of different. You know, Dad, and maybe it's the way we grew up or just the way that he saw his dad
well,
work.
Well, you're spoiled, then, he's not.
Well, yeah, or maybe that too. So, but I definitely have come from a little bit more of just a work smarter, not harder kind of mentality. So instead of not grind, like Dad, you know, I joke all the time that Dad will be at the lake outside, like blowing the leaves out of the woods, yeah. right? I'm like, what are you doing? That's like the woods. But that was kind of the mindset of I came in here, okay, well, what can we do? How can we do things differently or to be more effective? And I started like looking at things and saying, okay, well, if my goal is to produce, you know, $3,000 a day, then I could do that doing a bunch of Delta Dental $150 fillings, or I could do two implants or one ortho case. And so I was like, well, that makes a lot more sense. So for me, very quickly, I started targeting my CE at things that could elevate my production at a minimal, you know, time stance. And then what's happened now, which I really see it is because I joke all the time that, you know, that my production this past year has significantly increased. Hold on, we're taking a picture.
We're just so proud. I mean, are you kidding me?
So, yeah. So it's interesting. I've worked less days this year. Dad's worked less days this year, but for a lot of reasons. What?
But I want us to go backwards. I want us to talk about. I'm sorry. Because part's going to get there. Okay.
I may jump ahead.
A little bit. I want us to talk about the light bulb that should have gone off in your dad, in Rick's head, of oh my God, I brought an associate in. I was fearful of where the business was going to come from. I suddenly had open spots because I was feeding my associate, and that's something else we should talk about a little bit later,
yep.
is the mindset of feeding an associate. And then suddenly your open margins, not dental open margins, but schedule open margins, were filled with highly productive procedures, which were already inside of your practice. And that, to me, is the amazing part. It's not like you weren't offering wisdom teeth. It's because you were more available, you were able to do more wisdom teeth on your existing patient base.
So the first course he took, post me, you know, we bought Combeam, and then it was an implant refresher.
Right.
And next thing you know, implants are back.
So I come back in January of 17 with the commitment, every extraction is going to be a graft and membrane.
Yeah.
And I would say to this day, we're still in the high 90 percentages.
Yeah.
So he, you know, and now, which this gets into total kind of sidebar effect, which I don't think Dad minds sharing. But part of it, again, was, you know, Dad, about the time that I was coming out of dental school, you know, started to probably look at his financial life too, and trying to figure out where he was based off, you know, where he wanted to be retirement and what he had done, what he hadn't
done. I mean,
he's
52 at this point, right?
Right, exactly. And I think it became challenging too to start to see that, because for him, he was trying to shuck away as much money as possible, you know, at the same time. So he was definitely in like, okay, what can I do to get more income to do those things? And I think that was the surprising thing that he saw, was his income the first year I was there was the most, he had personally the most production he's ever had the year I came in.
Without a patient-based growth.
Without a patient-based growth.
That's what I keep going back to.
Our patient base grew within the first 3 years, only 500 patients.
That, which is nothing in the scheme of things.
No.
And
no,
but you doubled, like, your practice. You more than doubled your practice that
first time.
And by the way, I want to talk about this because I hear this from associates all the time. And so this is directed at the owner dentists out there. Because so many of them were in your position, Rick. And they say, well, this is my opportunity to squirrel away money. And they go into this tightening mode. Mm-hmm. And they don't invest in their practice. And I talk about comma thinking versus decimal thinking, and that savings mentality, I'm going to save my way to retirement, that decimal point thinking versus the comma thinking, which is, okay, I'm not going to spend my way to retirement, but I'm going to invest into my practice. So that's a good segue, actually. Talk to us about, because I've heard Rick say this many times. Maybe it's just through Sully, but I've heard it from you as well, that CBCT was a game changer for you.
No, 100 could not be more accurate.
So talk to us about that. Talk to us about the decision process, what led to that decision, and what the outcome of that was.
So that was one of those things, is my planner was like, you know, I said I want to buy Combeam, and he's like, well, you know, let's wait till Sully gets there so he can help pay for it. But in reality is, once refresher on the implant course, come back, start taking extractions and stuff, become grafts, led to implants. But we found all that because we started doing Combeam. So we came back, we put the Combeam in April 2016, and immediately...
And Sully had joined already at this point?
He had been out
1 year,
9 months.
9 months, okay.
So we came back and...
No, I didn't join the practice. I didn't buy in until January 1st, 2017.
No, but you were in already.
You were in the practice.
Yeah. You were already in the practice.
So basically, one of the things too is I was so busy, I wasn't checking my hygiene every time. So there was a lot of lost opportunity there on a regularly recurring basis. That Sully, when he came in and started checking hygiene all the time, we were able to catch up on that. But once we got the Combeam, it was like Oprah. Everybody gets a car, everybody gets a Combeam. People are like, what do you charge for them? Give them away. Doesn't matter. The dentistry you're going to find and diagnose with the Combeam and help patients understand and accept is off the charts.
But the flip side of this, which we have to comment on, is that what Dad did as soon as I came in was he was feeding me with a lot of dentistry, but he took that opportunity now to replace himself, to go take himself to the next level.
Yeah, take some CE.
Right. So and like in 2019, at age whatever he is, 57, 58 at that point, he had the most CE of any dentist in Tennessee.
Won
he
an
got
award.
The CE award.
275 hours.
At that, you know, and who's taking, because that was the mindset of like, I'm just going to keep investing and growing my thing, so I keep making myself more valuable to the practice, and that I can only do these niche things, and anything that these other dentists can do, they should be doing. So he kept investing. So the CBCT became so valuable because we saw the opportunity in the endo problems, mm-hmm. the missing teeth, the seeing implants, guided surgery, all these type things. And then instead of just looking at them, we saw patients in our practice that were already there. Didn't have to go pay money to get them in, marketing, anything like that. And we said, well, gosh, we should just do, instead of send that patient out, we should learn to do the dentistry that now we can do with the technology yeah. that we diagnose.
Let's step back for a second here. So selfishly speaking here, okay? So CBCT is what led us to first meet each other.
It did. Okay. You were the Patterson 3D Summit
yeah.
in Nashville.
And here in Nashville,
you spoke, and we bought the company.
In January yeah. of 16.
So in a not self-serving way, I really not in that way, is the reason I'm asking, let me frame it better, okay? The reason I'm asking these questions is so many people listening have heard the story. Oh, it changes this, it changes that. But yet they do nothing.
Right.
And what people don't talk about enough is walk through the decision-making process. The fear, because there's a fear. It's not like CBCT was $50,000.
It was $120,000 we bought ours.
Right. It was, and so it's not, I want to put it into perspective. Number one, it was $120,000 back then. Okay. You had just bought 8 chairs. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your practice was just starting to grow again.
I've only been there 9 months. 9 months.
So it's not like you really saw the fruits of all of that. Correct?
No.
You know, so you're doubling down in a sense, correct? So what were the fears? So and I want to back up one more second in that. And this is an important message, I think, okay? It's too often as dentists, when our reps come to us and invite us to learning/sales events, we go into it with a negative attitude of, I don't want to go get sold anything. But at the end of the day, part of my question is if XYZ distributor hadn't invited you to that particular event, would you have bought Conebeam? And if you didn't, let's see what wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's nobody says you have to go and buy, but you owe it to yourself to at least go and see what's possible. So walk me through your fears of spending $120,000, which essentially at that point is your money, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not his money.
Right.
We felt like that was the next step for us.
Okay.
So we knew it needed to happen.
What made you go to that particular event?
Scott, right? Sarek.
Sarek. Dennis yeah. Serona. Because right. I was already a Sarek practice since 2007.
Well, no offense, back then it was still Serona.
It was Serona.
It was the great old days.
it was the days of the blues, House of Blues party in Chicago. Yeah. I wanted to stay at the time with something that would, I believe their technology.
You had seen what Sarek had done for your practice.
Thank you. I'd seen what Sarek had done. I believed
so
in the company.
No-brainer
I believed in the process.
To hear them out first.
Okay.
Right. And you were there. August was there.
Yeah, Neil.
Neil.
Yeah,
I mean, all the heavy hitters were there. And so it's like, if you don't buy now, something's the matter with you.
Yeah.
And so they had it. We called a local bank. We got the financing. Installed it. Had the computers upgraded a little bit. And, you know, we used it. But that's the thing. They got in, we used it. With 3 hygienists, suddenly we're taking literally 30 cone beams a day. Mm-hmm. So we were spending all this time, you know, at night we were looking through them. Afternoons, our part of our regroup is now we're reading cone beams together. And I'm finding, and I used to tell Sully, that he joked about this, the answer is always occlusion. Well, now it's always occlusion until you get a cone beam. Then it's
there's a massive abscess.
Then there's a massive abscess. It's endo. It's extraction graft implant. But now I can show this to patients on a 52-inch screen, 60-inch screen in the hallway or in their room, and they suddenly understand it. The doctor thought enough of his practice and his patients to invest in this, so the patient understands it. It's a communication tool, just like the photography. And patients said yes, and yes, and yes, and yes.
So now we've leveraged Conebeam. Now we start adding implants to the practice. Are you placing implants at this point, Tully?
I went and got my implant training that summer.
All right, how do you guys compete with each other? Because it's one thing in my practice when I bring an associate in and I'm up front like, listen, I'm doing the implants right now, which I'd love to talk about the negatives of that as well in the big scheme
of
things.
The long run, yeah.
Yeah, and So how are you guys handling the competing with each other part? Because you want to do implants too, correct?
No, we both are.
Right. I know now you
that
are.
That was hard. That was a hard period. So a hard period for us.
Because
was
a lot of dentists face this.
Right.
Like, either they don't bring an associate with a lot of skills because they're afraid they're going to compete with themselves, or, you know, or they give away all the good stuff, which I have a problem with that too, but that's a different story. Or they have this clash and this competition trying to do the fancy stuff, and then the person ends up leaving.
Right. And that was a hard, there were two parts that were really hard for us. One was, which was kind of trickling together, was one was as we approached that summer where I learned to do implants, we started competing more. I also saw the practice profitability going up like crazy. You know, now we're in year two, we're close to 2 million, you know, going from 1.415 to 2 million. And I'm just seeing this go up and I'm like, hey, I want to buy in. Right. And so, and personality wise, I'm bulldoggy maybe a little bit on some of that probably. And just like, I was like, hey,
I call that spoiled.
Bulgy.
I don't know. I just, you know, and so, and I wanted to do that stuff too. And, you know, I had this mindset of like, which obviously I talk a lot about on the podcast of like, if you want it, go get it, but go take the CE, go learn to do it. You know, put your money where your mouth is. And then I wanted to be the best. And I didn't want to wait to have to do good clinical dentistry.
You didn't want to wait time. Your turn.
Yeah. And there was good aspects to the bad aspects. The negatives were, I probably learned a lot of things the hard way because I didn't wait. I was cowboy, whatever it was. But then there's a lot of good aspects, right? I wouldn't be here if I didn't push so hard sometimes. And so for us, it was difficult to share that thing. But I think the core of why it's been successful is because both of us try to come back to a mindset of abundance versus scarcity.
Exactly.
And that we don't, even though we both want to do more implants, we both want to do more wisdom teeth, because I'd be lying if I told you there haven't been days that we are basically yelling at each other on how he got to see that consult and I didn't, and who scheduled that. And, you know,
I mean, because at the end of the day, while you are family, you still have your own life to fund, your own family to take care of. You have your own family to take care of.
And for the most part, we're paid off eat what you kill, yeah. Right? I mean, like,
and
it's
the,
a production
it
mindset of, yeah. So, like, for me, like, that was...
Why did he get that hybrid and you didn't?
Yeah, and so that was hard. And, like, and we had to keep coming back to... And we were fortunate in that family, ultimately, from day one, was the, we can't stay mad at each other.
Thanksgiving dinners get really awkward that way.
And I think that's definitely a point that is an incredible, like the whole father-son thing, if there's anything that is an advantage, it was that. But there's some that don't work that way because they can't get over it. But for us, it was like, we're going to have that same relationship. And we're trying to have that with Megan too, because if at the end of the day, the relationship is the most important, and that goes back to culture, then we can have those arguments and then we can come back to saying, okay, hey, if we both want to do this, what do we need to do to make it fair? Or what do we need to do to keep bringing in more so that there's so much abundance that it doesn't matter, right? Because at the end of the day, there's plenty of dentistry to go around.
No disrespect to you, Sully. I'm going to give Rick 80% of the credit on this. I think his personality
is uniquely unique
to kind of say take one for the team.
Well, Dad, talk a little bit about, I mean, this could go into a total of the rabbit holes, which is probably a great podcast on some level, but, you know, talk about where you were personally, just from a standpoint of if I come into the practice probably 10 years earlier, we are no longer together. We probably have a totally dysfunctional father-son relationship. And I agree with you. I think because of where he was at personally, which he can talk about a little bit, that's the key to probably all this, all of it.
We're going to go there. All right.
I'm not saying you have
if
to
you're
go
comfortable.
All
no,
there.
I'm good.
Saying,
I'm good.
To the comfort level that you want to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's
2012, I got involved with a 12-step group called Al-Anon. It is a 12-step group for family and friends of alcoholics. And I had some alcoholics in my family, and that affects us all. It's a family disease. While working through that program and working through the 12 steps, I realized my part in that and my part in what I needed to fix in me We focus on ourselves. And so by working through 4, 5, 6, 7 years of recovery at this point, it allowed me to treat Sully in a different way, because one of the big symptoms of someone who was where I was we try to control everything. I had an opinion, and yours ought to be the same as mine. It was a very black and white world. This is how we do it. This is how it should be done, period. And I realized my own character defects that I had to improve and work on, and how that affected all my relationships, not just my relationship with the people in my life that were alcoholics. And so by doing that, I learned to find, you know, serenity, peace, however you want to call it. And one of the things was learning to give up control, sort of the let go and let God mentality. Okay. And like Sally said, this can get on a whole squirrely rabbit hole, and I'm trying to kind of synopsize this a little bit, but basically, I realized I wasn't going to control Sully. I need to let him be him. I need to stay in my lane, stay in my hula hoop. And by doing that, that gave him the freedom to grow.
Good and bad, probably.
Good and bad, because what happens is...
But all good in the end.
Oh, for sure.
Just like as a parent, if you give a child a car and they wreck it, they don't really see the loss in that, but if they work hard on the summers and buy their own car, they're a lot more proud of that. It's that you give them the opportunity to win. Okay, the kid that puts himself through school and comes out with a degree is a lot more appreciative of that degree than the kid who was given a trust fund, as a general rule. Mm-hmm. And so by giving him the dignity to both succeed and fail, it allowed him to grow faster and allowed him to win. But it allowed us both to win. You know, Sully would say, you know, Dad's on the grace train. You know, rather than judge people, and this is how I treat patients now too, as everybody's where they are, let's address them that.
Yeah.
And the same with my team members, the same with people in life, okay? But what it's done for me personally, it allowed me to translate that over to me to my professional life too. And if I had tried to micromanage and microcontrol, it would have been a disaster. But by sitting back, giving up control, giving him the dignity and the opportunity to bring in new ideas and not thinking I knew it all, that I had all the answers, but say, hey, maybe there's a better way. Block scheduling, this kind of marketing, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. And giving you the opportunity to bring those back, even though most of them were your ideas.
That's okay. That's why I give out the ideas for people to use them.
Not steal them, but use them.
I'm T-Bone's best implementer.
Without question.
Every time he would come to Raleigh and come back, it was like, oh, here we go. What's this weekend? But that allowed him to blossom rather than me keep cutting down and, you know, cutting the flower off for it at the bud.
Well, and what part, for me, what was so impactful, not only as a son, but like as an associate at the time and trying to learn like how to do dentistry, was I saw that and that made me want to be more like that, right? When I would see him give on stuff, it made me so much more willing to want to ask for help, to go look for things to do that. It perpetuated that kind of mentality.
The word I wrote down while you were talking, and there's a lot of important things there. The word I wrote down that that hit me the most was the word dignity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a word as owners, as type A personalities, which me and Sully are for sure, and I'm sure you are as well. Sometimes we forget how to give people dignity because it's easy for us to say, oh, you must be stupid. Why can't you get this? And I think that's an area where I have to improve myself is to get to the next step. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. You know, you joke that you're probably the best implementer, and I 100% agree with you that you have been, for sure. I talk to a lot of people about you as an example, and they all say, well, it must be easy. You walked into your dad's practice, or it's easy to double, triple, quadruple your practice when you have somebody driven come in. And I argue it's not easy. It's not easy to bring in a strong personality. It's not easy to bring in a strong clinical skill set. It's not easy when you're trying to squirrel away for your retirement and catch up. It's not easy to go invest 120 grand plus whatever the equipment was, plus the renovation of the office. It's not easy to do those things. I will argue that more people fail in that scenario than the scenario where they bring in a weaker person that is their mentality is, I want to be a bread and butter dentist. And to those who have said that to me, and I understand, I think a lot of it comes from jealousy, frankly speaking, that why have you gotten so much so quick? And what I tell everybody is I'm sharing this with, because you've been very open about sharing that personal story, is I tell people, look, Sully's not for everybody. No. He's not. Okay, just like I'm not for everybody. But what you can't do with me about him is you can't say he hasn't earned it. Okay, you've been given opportunities that have been presented to lots of other people. The difference is you kicked open the door when the door was barely open. And so many people have had the opportunity, they just haven't kicked open the door. And there's a relentlessness to you that is very annoying at times. But
I take this as a compliment, so thank you.
No, but it is very annoying at the time, but it's reason you've gotten to this point.
Right.
And I hope you maintain some of that to get you to the next point. Okay. Right. Enough about Sully. Okay.
That was one of the nicest things you ever said about me.
That's very hard. Okay. That's very hard. All right. The practice is growing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into the buying process and all of that, but the practice is growing. You guys are now two super general dentists at this point. You're both doing implants. You're both doing wisdom teeth. You now have added IV sedation to your practice. You know, you've grown hygiene. You're in this dilapidated building.
Well, and what we were doing to kind of just tie that up, mm-hmm. is, because you mentioned these things, is we kept pouring on more steam.
Yeah.
So when we saw a comb beam worked, we were like,
you put more fuel in the fire.
Right. We didn't just take that, sit in our laurels and enjoy that. We reinvested that back into, what can we do better clinically? What can we do better business-wise? What CE can we take?
We kept taking CE. We kept investing in technology.
My kids, thank you guys.
Yeah. A lot of us three dentists. We kept the gas to the floor.
Yeah.
And I think that was it. That was important.
We soon bought another. We bought a Speedfire, a second oven.
Another Cerec.
We bought another, so now we're three mills and two prime scans and a.
You know what's amazing to me is how many people say, well, I don't want to grow because I'm going to have to spend money.
It's the other way around.
Can't help them.
I'm like, wait a minute. You don't want to make more because you're going to have to spend a little bit of money?
Right.
I mean, anyway. All right. Now let's talk about the realization that okay, 2 points. And I want to get serious for a second here. Okay, get back to being serious. The realization that you're outgrowing your space and your procedure mix is outgrowing your space, and your space wasn't reflective of the dentistry that you were doing and trying to do, okay? So let's talk about that realization and the process to the decision process, because I'm looking back to, because I'm working, I don't want to say I'm good. Working with you, we're friends at this point.
Yeah, but this is huge.
And I want to walk through that process, and I know it from your side, not from your side, because I was more intimately involved in hearing these processes. Let's talk about the realization, okay? When did you guys realize that you needed a new space? Outside of the fact that you wanted it when you first moved in, when did it become a business reality that your space was costing you money?
Probably not long after. You bought in January 1st, 2017. 50-50 partners. We formed Sullivan Dome Partners. 6 months after that?
Yeah.
Maybe sooner?
It was.
Was it more you or him?
It was him.
Yeah, I figured that.
When the realization became clear that we were, that idea of, okay, now we are, we we no longer can catch every hygiene check. We're having to do it once a year. You know, we're getting booked out. When the realization became that, hey, I think we could use a third doctor, neither one of us thought that was possible in our current space.
Rightfully so. Okay.
So well, so that realization became so a, we probably need
that's like 2 years
space.
In, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So like 3-4 years ago.
Correct.
Probably 4 years ago.
It was probably 4 years ago that we started kicking tires about, like, you know, this won't be our forever home. Now, Dad at that time, I think, was totally probably, you know, Dad knew he was going to practice a long time, but he also, I don't think, knew that the new space would be, he would be as
reinvigorated.
Reinvigorated and 50% involved in the whole thing at this point. You know, I think, you know.
Did you honestly think you'd finish your career over there?
I kind of didn't. You know, Dad always said at some point in our situation, the dirt would be worth more than you can make from practicing dentistry.
Okay.
That was a tipping point. And the economic and the growth around us was approaching that tipping point. But the problem with that was anywhere we go now is expensive. There's not any land. Everything's built out, all that kind of stuff.
And those were some hard conversations for us because Dad owned the land, but we owned the business together. So,
and you weren't a partner in the real estate.
I wasn't a partner in the real estate. So here I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to necessarily make long-term plans not knowing what your plan is too. You know, those were just some tough conversations that we had. And so, you know, two things happened.
And by that you meant you didn't want to spend a ton of money in leasehold improvements
right.
on something that you didn't necessarily own and that you had no control of where your $500,000
right.
in
he,
leasehold
he was concerned that all of a sudden I would up and sell a practice and what we're going to do, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
And like, sure. like I knew Dad wasn't going to try to screw me, but it was still, it's a fear of.
Of course.
Where we're at, right?
And the reason I bring that up is I clarify that statement by what you meant because it applies to many people, you know, majority of dentists lease their space.
Right.
And that lease holds them back from investing in their practice.
Right.
Okay. Because they're like, well, I don't own it. I want to spend the money. And again, it comes back to that. You got to put money in to get the money out, you know? Right. So, okay. So we've decided that we need a place 4 years ago. Okay. Now it took what? A year to build this place?
Almost exactly.
A year to build a place. Let's call it 6 months to allocate for getting the dirt.
It was a year, basically, from when we bought the land and we started building.
Okay. So, but there, that's 2 years.
2 years
okay?
of building.
It's about a two-year process.
But the reason I'm bringing this up, okay, is 4 years ago, you realized you wanted or needed or you were seeing that this was going to exist. Mm-hmm. And you know, we are only accounting for 2 years of that time.
Right.
Let's walk through that first 2 years. From the realization to actually building what we're in today, what you guys are in today, I'm visiting today. That realization, let's walk through that 2 year period. What was the process? And let me help us along here. I know you called me a lot.
Yep.
And my answer was always, why don't you walk through the exercise of doing that? Because at one point you wanted to lease the space.
Well, so mentally, Dad and I we wanted to own because mm-hmm. Dad had been
that's all you ever
occupied
done.
Thing his entire career. And like, so I obviously, that's all I saw. So like, to me, that was the mentality. Now, what really accelerated this process was my grandma, to throw in some more family fun dynamics, which I know you will love, is my grandma owned the land that we're currently sitting on that was next door to our old building. And we had known that at some point that she would sell the land or she would do something. There was a little kind of burger bar here that it had been a number of different things that were leasing the space, and it kind of finally became to a point where she wanted to cash out and sell the land. Well, she came to us, and I think at the time she wanted $1.6 million.
$2 million
for the 0.6 acres that we're sitting on for the dirt and the little shack that was on it, which was absolutely, utterly.
And that was April of 18. She called me over on a Sunday afternoon. I went to the house, and her and her husband at the time. So we're going to sell the house. We need to move to assisted living or independent living, and we need this much a month, so we're going to sell the property, and it's $2 million.
So that moment was huge because this is when everything, like, started pressing play. Because now Dad and I are sitting, we've got an opportunity to buy the land next door to our building. What a unbelievable opportunity to do that. And build our dream space and make it happen. So the first thing I did was I probably called you and I called a couple other people and said, here's what I got. Can this work? And the hard part about this is, and T-Bone, you and I talk a lot about this with mastermind people, is that it's so hard to separate emotion from an ego and jealousy from sometimes the numbers and the reality of the situation. So Dad and I both at this point are superly emotional in that, gosh, if we could get this, like, we want this space, we want this land. And you were, I mean, I remember you basically being like, dude, the math doesn't work. Like, you, and my best math,
by the
friend.
Way, by the way, the math for this place doesn't, looking back, this was the least of all the math. This was the worst math ever.
It'll work.
But that's a different story. But I think the process was very important.
Right. So then, and my best friend's saying the same thing. He's like, dude, you can't buy that little land because you can only build so big of a building. And it doesn't make sense to do that, you know, and for a dental space. It doesn't make sense. And so you said, I really need you to you and your dad to go look at space, other space, and see what else is in your area that you would consider moving to from an owning and a leasing standpoint. And I need you to work through that process. And that's what we did.
And so, and I also said, if you remember, I said, wait.
Dad did say wait, because me at 31 years old,
tomorrow, we can do it.
We can make it work. We'll grind. We'll push. Right.
Well, I had done enough real estate, and also knew my mother that they were asking the moon.
Yeah,
I knew what the comps. I knew what the comps were. Absolutely, you know, and so I understood that stuff. And so I said, just wait. Let's see what happens.
So we started looking.
How important was going through that process?
Huge. We went and looked probably 6 different spaces.
Lease and purchase. Existing buildings, dirt.
I drove you by one, remember? Yeah. We went and walked through it.
I left.
And
never really looked at much dirt. It was pretty much at this area. But I wanted to stay within a half a mile.
Mile or so. I didn't
want to get off to another township or anything like that. Township.
And so we found a space. And we were so far along that we had
plans.
We had plans. And this was another thing. I was thinking, like, do I need to get a designer, an architect, whatever? And you said, hey, your distributor will help you start to design plans basically at no cost.
It's free. Take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. And so we worked with Mike Williams and basically had functional plans in a lease space. And that was huge for me because I've never, you know, Dad's done it a little bit, but we've really never designed a dental
space.
To see what went into it so that by the time it came around to this, we had done it once, you know, on paper. And through, we were literally at a point where our attorneys were talking lease agreements. Mm-hmm. And then, so you fast forward to the fall.
That summer, August, I had gone to Boca to a Dentsply Sirona treatment center event in Boca Raton. And I'm sitting there next to Mike Williams, who's the office.
And this land is under contract.
This land is under contract. I get a text message from my mom's attorney that the land came back at 0.6 acres, not 0.7, so he changed his offer. Would we be interested at...
It was at 1.... Like,
would we be interested 1.3, at 1.25 million?
Okay.
I said, hang on. I text Sully. I turned to Mike Williams and said, how much does it cost to build a building on per square foot? He texts Schaub, who ultimately was our builder,
we're doing
with
math
a number.
On the fly
I'm literally sitting here with 3 text messages, conversations going, and I text back the attorney, we'll take it. No bank, no nothing. Like, here we go.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And then here comes the drama.
So this is the fun part.
Yeah, but the drama is family stuff.
Yeah, family stuff. You know. Yeah, ended up that the attorney went back to the buyer and said, we had a little...
Every deal has that.
We had some eBay going.
But I think
it's important to mention
that, like, it wasn't like it was some...
There's always... Right, you're like, oh my god, it's like buying a house today. Oh, I'm getting this house, it's great. No, it's not, you know.
Yeah, counteroffer.
Well, and then emotions
was all oh,
then
so
emotions
hard.
Get
so
in
hard.
The way, right? And then the whole I'm not giving in, you know, gets you know, and there's a lot to talk about there. But for
those that think we got it in a song and a dance because it was my mother's property, no,
that's
we didn't.
Not true.
We paid retail and then some.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it came back and it, yeah. So yeah.
So okay. So there's a couple of things that are important to me there. Okay, my dad never told me. He never made a decision for me. But I always joke that I don't make decisions without my dad. But yet he's never once in my life made a decision for me. He's always told me Well, why don't you work through that? What does it look like if you choose to rent a space? What does it look like if you choose to buy this house or buy this car? Or, you know, I kind of just went through that with the nonprofit place and all of that. He's like, what does it look like? What are the pluses and minuses? And it's a great exercise because you learn so much. You learn about leases. You learn what's hidden in leases, what's not hidden in leases. You learn what goes into a floor plan. You go learn all those things. So there's that process that sometimes we have set in our mind that this is the way we want to go. And sometimes going through the process makes us miss things.
Right.
Okay, we miss a deal or we miss this or we miss an opportunity and we're going to have regrets a little bit. Sometimes going through the process allows us to be ready and available when something does show up.
So on that point, what made us able to make those decisions so quickly when it did come back around was because we had gone through the process. We knew that, okay, at that point, at that value, we could make it work. Yeah. It made sense. Yeah. It was okay.
Because lease space has a cost.
Right.
Upfitting lease space has a cost. You know, the equipment is the equipment. So that's going to be, for the most part, the same.
Sure, sure.
No matter where you go, whether you take old equipment, buy new equipment, all of that stuff. You know, you're going through the process. And another part of which will foreshadow this, you know, I don't want to talk too much detail with that, but it's you never know until you ask, right, in terms of equipment. But I don't want to get into too much of that story. But, you know, it's you never know until you ask. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is if you don't leverage and befriend reps, you wouldn't know what it cost to build something. If you couldn't turn to Mike, for example, and say how much this is and leverage his network.
Right.
He's not shooting out of the blue sky of what it's going to cost. He's like, well, this XYZ builder is a reputable builder who's built other dental offices. Let me ask them what this cost. And,
right.
And maybe it's plus or minus 30, 40, 50% based on what your tastes are, right? Mm-hmm. It all varies.
Of course.
Okay. But at least gives you an idea so that you can do paper napkin math. And be like, okay.
Which we literally did.
Right, but that's how all things should be. It's paper napkin math. You can't be paralytical, you know, can't get paralysis in the analysis of it. So I wanted to talk about going through the process of looking at space. And I try to get all the masterminders that say, you know, I've got my eye on this land. I'm like, what else have you looked like? That's it. I'm like, how can you do, I can't buy anything without looking.
It's because we make emotional decisions.
Yeah.
Because we get emotion, Again, there were things that you had done for me from a mentor standpoint that I saw worked. And so, like, you kept building your own personal capital in my trust with you because I saw what you did and it worked. So then when you would say stuff like that, I was willing to do it. I think that sometimes the hard part is it's so hard to set aside the emotional aspect of it. Of, well, I don't want to go look at lease space because I want to own.
And when we say look at it, like, I mean literally look at it.
Look at it.
No, not like just, oh, I went by and looked at it. Oh, I took a tour. I'm talking about what does it cost to build it?
Right.
Like, what is the space? You know, what are you giving up? Is it a shopping center? Is there plus of that? Is it minus? The first one you showed me, I'm like, it's even a worse location than you're already in. Like, why would you step backwards? You know, that was my reaction to it. I remember the one down the street.
Karate studio. Yeah.
Like, that's worse.
Part of it is, though, it's the same mental process you go through buying a cone beam, buying a CEREC, buying a prime scan, is that we realize there again, we're betting on ourselves. This is the ultimate bet on ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we realized 2 years in that we were outgrowing our space, that we were outgrowing the type of dentistry we're doing in our space, and all of that. Then we realized that we wanted to have a new building. And we spent 2 years going through the process. And part of that was, it's a lot of money. Okay. Sure. Part of that is, you know, we got to find the right spot or not right spot. Part of that is, you know, we have ups and downs. We go spend a lot of time designing a place, doing all of that. And then that didn't work out or that didn't meet code or whatever it is. The landlord said X, Y, Z, all of those things. We go through the fears. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, what was your, if you don't mind, what was your rent at the place next door? Because when I say rent, I know you owned it, but you paid rent to yourself.
We paid rent $5,000.
$5,000 a month. And this place is far above $5,000 a month, correct?
Probably 6 or 7X.
Yeah. So, you know, with this going through the fear of that, going through the decision process on of that. And then the other part I think we should talk about a little bit is, so when we build a new place, our first thought is we want to do it the traditional way. which is, oh, it's 10 by 10 ops, or it's 10 by 12 ops, or, hey, I can do it. And I have zero issues with design ergonomics. I like them. I've had their equipment in my office. Hey, I can get away with these skinnier ops and do all of this. And I remember when we've gone through that with Will and some other people, I've always said, what type of dentistry are you trying to do? So walk us through the decision process, Sully and Rick, of the type of office you were trying to build. We know we want it to be beautiful. We want it to be this and that. But let's talk more about the functional part of that, which is, you know, operatory size, all of that stuff. What went into that thought process?
We wanted room.
Well, yeah. I mean, no. Again, this is where probably it was helpful to kind of work through things. Because when you get on Facebook, what you see is that there are you know, you get camps, right? Like everybody, like Breakaway is a big one. You know, dual entry, single entry. This is stuff I'd never even thought of. You know, I was in big open bays where we just kind of crammed stuff in because it was what the space allowed, and we kept adding on. And so one of the biggest exercises was starting to step back and decide, okay, how do we want to practice in the space, and what do we want to do if we can design it for our own? And to me, I think that's one of the most important things that someone looking to build their own space or build out their own space should think about is how do you practice dentistry? And what is probably my biggest pet peeve is when you ask for advice, you should ask them, how do they like to practice dentistry? Because if you're someone who likes to work four operatories and, you know, run around crazy, or you maybe you don't do any surgery, or however it is that you practice, you would not be you shouldn't come to my office and look at how we do things. Depending on how you practice is how you should build your office. So as we started working through those exercises, we kind of looked and said, hey, we really like doing more comprehensive dentistry. We like doing longer appointments, seeing less people, doing a lot of IV sedation, and, you know, and then from a storage standpoint, we really wanted to have kind of a central storage. So what happened and ended up happening was we really took ideas from different camps to kind of mold them together to build out our own space, kind of how we wanted to do it.
Okay. So talk to us about more specifics about that. Like, what changed along the way? Like, how'd you end up with surgical operatories? How'd you design? How are your hygiene operatories different than your doctor?
Yeah.
I'm saying is it can't be a one size fit all.
No. So let's think about that.
Because in my view, you have three different operatories right in here. You have surgical operatories, you have dentist operatories, you have hygiene operatories, and they're all three different.
So the obvious one was that we wanted to have, Dad and I knew that we wanted to have some surgery operatories.
Tell me about the
part of that was because, you know, having living in our old space, we knew that we wanted to have centrifuges, monitors, you'd have scanners.
There was
we wanted to have more counter space to lay things out. So a traditional kind of small 12 o'clock cabinet with a dual entry model wasn't going to work for that. We wanted more privacy in those operatories. You know, we didn't want side cabinetry necessarily, right? We knew that if we had all this cabinetry in the operatories, that stuff would get stored there. And, you know, I really wanted to cut down on the amount of space that people could store stuff, because then it's like your house, you know, you find stuff that you never really realized you put places because it just gets there and sits there. Mm-hmm. What was a big difference for us, which is kind of, I guess, on some level a little unique, is that we wanted to do, we had two left-handed hygienists and three right-handed. So single entry wouldn't really work because a negative to single entry is it's going to limit on some level because it's
single entry on the right side or the left side.
Right, because then it puts, yes. Yeah. And so for us, we did all of our hygiene in dual entry with 12 o'clock cabinets, patient over the chair delivery from the chair, and because we wanted to kind of accommodate that flexibility in hygiene. You know, you also don't need quite as much privacy in the hygiene operatories maybe as you do when you're doing, you know, more intensive stuff in the doctor treatment rooms. So all of our doctor treatment rooms are 10 by 12, and they all have single entry.
All your general dentistry doctor rooms are 10 by 12.
Correct. And then, which again is an excessive size relative to, like, you know,
it's not in my opinion.
It's not in our opinion, yeah. Right. But compared to some of the people that will say you only need 10 by 10, 10 by 8, stuff like that. You know, it, and again,
based on the type of dentistry we're trying to do,
we've got 11,000 square feet and only 15 ops.
Yeah.
We could have put 20 ops
or 30 ops.
But our mentality is that I want to do, you know, my best day would see that I have, and not even a big implant hybrid stuff. My best day would that I would see one patient, they would be sedated.
In the morning, one in the afternoon.
Right, and I would do three crowns and four fillings and a root canal on them. And then the afternoon would be something similar to that. It's general dentistry in a comprehensive manner. Let's clarify.
He's going
to
go home in the afternoon. I'm going to see pages.
Yeah, I'm going to do one patient like that and then go play golf or whatever. But
well, you're just jealous.
I know.
And then in the surgery, we wanted – and then we kept the same thing on hygiene. So still
– 10 by 12.
10 by 12 in hygiene. Again,
just dual entry.
Just dual entry.
Okay.
And the doctors, we went 12 by 15. I mean, the surgery upstairs.
Okay.
That was a concern at first. Again,
that is too big.
Not too big, but what was surgery going to look like upstairs? Mm-hmm. You know, now we're putting, you know, we got multiple floors based off the land, you know, trying to partition where stuff goes. You know, is that going to be weird having different stuff on both floors? And it, I mean, we have two sterilizations.
But we still don't know what that's like because we haven't started yet.
We don't, right?
But conceptually, it makes sense to me.
And conceptually, it gave us the opportunity to, let's say that Sullivan Dental Partners decides that we're not, we want to, you know, I don't know. At some point, we're not going to be here anymore, and someone uses this space. Well, now the space is basically two offices, right? Yeah. It's got its own waiting room, its own store. So that made a lot of sense to create these segments in the space that would do different things. But again, it all came back to the core of how we want to practice and what we want to do, and that's important.
And I want to add to that. It's not just how you want to practice today, but also looking at or dreaming about how you want to practice 3, 4, 5 years from now. Because, you know, my vision for you, Rick, is, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years from now, Rick is literally the guy that comes in and I'm going to do a surgery a couple of times a week and I'm going to be out of here. I know you mentally don't like that idea, but, you know, you'll get to a point where you like that. And my vision for Sully is almost very similar. It's where you're coming in, you're doing just the dentistry you want to do. Maybe you don't want to leave. You want to go downstairs and visit with your patients so you stay connected to them, okay? And then the general dentistry practice, in my opinion, should be run by either future partners or other associates. So, you know, I think that there's an important aspect of that we should build our practice not just for where we're at, but where we want to do. Because I'm a firm believer, if you build it, you will find a way to build to that. You know, you'll find a way to fill
field of dreams.
That's probably like Dad's definitely been like really good about letting me kind of have those like 5-10 year dreams. You know, like we. Mm-hmm. So one of the big exercises that we went through was, do we take the whole building versus not?
Right.
Right. Because initially the plan was.
Yeah,
not.
I remember talking about that. Yeah. Initially, you're going to take half the building and.
Right. At least the upstairs, mm-hmm. or at least part of the upstairs, and so. You know, going through the exercise of laying it out without that.
And that's an opportunity cost. Like, how much rent are you going to get?
And then looking at calling our real estate buddies, mm-hmm. seeing what rent we could get, doing the math on that and saying, oh gosh, well, if I just do, you know, if I'm only getting...
Oh, I'm going to get $4,000 a month in rent.
Then it didn't make sense. Yeah. So that was super... So the decisions we were making along those sides of design, layout, taking the whole building, you know, those were... We try to not make these emotional
decisions.
Because
I remember that, actually. I remember the building wasn't quite this big at one point in time.
It was a little smaller.
And then you guys were only going to take half the building, and then, you know, either the top floor or the bottom floor.
So by doing the lease exercise previously, mm-hmm. we realized that we needed 6,500 feet to really get what we wanted.
Mm-hmm. At this time.
With the number of operatories and team room and things like that. And so we realized that the one floor, basically 5,000 feet here, wasn't going to be enough.
Okay.
And so this goes back to our discussion of previously, me sort of stepping back from my, oh my gosh, we got to rent half of this, mm-hmm. give him the opportunity and the dignity to make this thing work, and let's play it out. Let me not try to control it, not try to micromanage it.
I think the dignity wasn't to let it make it work. The dignity was to let him go through the process of seeing what it would take to work. You know, let him find out.
And then me being open-minded enough to listen.
Yeah.
And then running that by my planner and stuff and said, okay, this is going
to
work.
Because I think, I remember talking to Sully about this, and I was talking to him like, dude, why are you going through all this trouble for $5,000 in rent? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want somebody there. It stifles your growth, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know.
Takes up parking.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got to deal with somebody? I mean, like, yeah. Who the hell wants to deal
with
somebody?
Right now, he and I have the keys.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about who else is coming in here at 10 o'clock on Saturday night.
You know, and especially, you know, so to me, the business side, the pure business side is like, oh, you want to rent it, you don't want to waste space. But then there's an opportunity cost of that, you know? And to me, the opportunity cost, let's say you lose $5,000 a month and it takes you, it's 2-3 years before you really grow into this place. That's $180,000. In the scheme of things, that's nothing.
That's less than a month's production.
I mean, that's nothing, right? So the opportunity, leaving it open. It's like when people ask me, why don't you rent out the retreat? I'm like, because if they take up a Friday or Saturday.
It's messed up your weekend.
Dude, it screws up a course.
Right.
And that $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever dollar amount it is I get in rent to rent out my training center, is a drop in the bucket. Like one extra course anytime I demand it is worth any number of rent I'll get for 2 years.
Exactly. And that's what we found out here.
Yeah. And so that's the opportunity cost. So, okay. So now let's talk about, while Sully has left us for a second here. And I'm sorry this has gone longer than we anticipated, but I think it's a great conversation. I'm all in it. All right. So now let's talk about... Now I'm glad it's just me and you because I'm hearing things from Sully and I don't know your reaction or your thought process on it.
Well, you know. The one kicker here that I think is really important to put is that, you know, 58 years old, I'm moving into a brand new, basically about a $6 million all in cost.
A lot of money.
You know, is I was able to sell my place.
Right.
Okay. So I was pretty equityed up because I'd had it since 1993.
Yeah, your cost basis wasn't what you sold it for.
So I was able to, you know, get a significant nest egg a few weeks ago when we closed. That's all going to go in funding retirement plans for me. So there's definitely some advantages there. You know, plus I'm going halves into this where I was whole into that.
Right.
So, you know, this is some long-term
financial
planning.
And people are
going
to say,
too.
Well, the half is now $3 million, but it's self-funded. And the business pays for it, right? So, and I know you're part of the business, but the business is revenueing, it's cash flowing, they're paying for it. And this is a great segue into the next conversation. I remember Sully talking about how busy you guys were, and we hear this from lots of people. I'm busy, I need this, I need that. And I go, well, why don't you just get another dentist? Because we don't have the space. And my response was, well, why have you gone through the process of what it would look like to bring a third dentist in? So again, let's kind of frame it here. Okay. We're in 2,700 square feet ish. Okay. We're two dentists, eight operatories. We're now at this point, I think you guys are almost at $2.5-3 million.
We're in the summer of 2020.
Right.
This post is lockdown,
a year ago. Yeah.
Post COVID or smack dab in the middle of this.
Yeah. And at this point, your practice has grown from 1.4 to 1.5. And I think at that point, you're at 2.5, 2.8, something like that. You know, maybe 3 million.
You're over 3 last year.
Yeah. So you're clearly, you have maxed out everything you can get out of this business, out of that space, I should say. And then Sully's like, I'm like, well, why don't you get another dentist? You need another dentist. You need another dentist. And he's like, well, where am I going to put them? He goes, I'm just going to wait till we get to the building. I go, well, like, your building is going to be, at that time, I thought it was going to be like $4 million, not $6 million, okay? I'm like, you're going from a $5,000 rent to a $25,000 rent. And, like, why wait to pay that 20? Why wait to incur a 20 grand up cost?
Yeah.
So why don't you at least just look at what it would look like to? So when he came to you and said, I want to bring a third dentist into our current space, what was your initial thought to that?
Well, because I was used to him coming to me with ideas now, and honestly, in all fairness, 95% of them had worked out really well. You know, it was like with employees. Whenever we lost an employee, I'd get all bent out of shape about it, and he would say, Dad, is the new person better than what we had?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I kind of have to shake my head and go, yeah, you're right. You know, so that being said, it's like, okay, at this point, I'm like, all right, what's the next idea?
Yeah.
You know?
So, Sully, what I'm talking about here is so we're trying, you know, we're getting to the end of the story here because I know it's long, okay? We were talking about we're at 2,700 square feet, you're at two dentists, you've grown from $1.5 to $3 million-ish, you know, plus or minus $100,000 on either end. You've obviously maxed out that building. You want to wait to bring in a third dentist for when you get into the building.
Right.
And I'm just always saying, I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just saying, have you thought about what it would look like to bring the third dentist in? And I was just asking your dad, what crazy thoughts went through his head when you said, I think we can bring a third dentist in into our current space. And I think this is so important because I think too many people say, I can't bring somebody in until I get this.
Right.
And I'm always of the mindset of let's prove it because, you know, maybe you should just stay in your building.
So this was kind of like bringing Sully in round two.
Right.
Which
exactly.
I'd already done this before and it worked.
Right.
So I was like,
The logistics part of it was trying to get creative, right? Because our thought was, okay, we'll wait.
And at this point, you guys are only open 4 days a week,
correct?
We're only
open 4 days a week. You know, Dad's always kind of dabbled the idea of like a Friday, you know, for
here and there
surgeries, but not really committed to that. And so then we thought, okay, well, how can we get creative with the schedule? So we looked at, okay, if we hire a fourth doctor, when can we work?
Obviously, the third dentist.
If I hire a third doctor, obviously we have Friday. Mm-hmm. But if we're all here, that's three docs and four chairs, and we run a pretty robust assistant column already with, like, sleep, some ortho.
Yeah.
So, like, that's going to really kind of put us at one chair per doc.
Which I think is doable, but there's some definitely challenges with
mentally,
it.
Mentally, that was a huge barrier.
Lot of challenges,
because,
yeah.
I mean, Dad, remember when I got there before,
he was running all over
three chairs. Yeah. So now I'm trying to get him to go
do one.
To one chair after I've already kind of got him
that
to
was
two.
That was the biggest, hardest step for me. And Sully will tell you it still is.
Yeah, it still is. I get the calls every once in a while.
It still is, but he's getting better. And not lose the production because remember we're still independent people with retirement plans with families.
Well,
we got to make our number, right?
And I think also even more pressure now because you know you've got to make this down payment for this building.
The building's coming.
You know this building is coming.
Well, we're getting bills.
Right. So you're like, I got to produce too.
Never felt that pressure.
Yeah. You've never
felt
that pressure.
I never felt that pressure before.
He has.
Yeah.
When you were coming in.
I never felt that before.
You know, but now you're feeling that pressure.
And so we started looking at chairs. So then, not only am I asking him to go to one chair, but now I'm asking him to go to 3 days clinically. So I said, here's what I think we can do.
3 days doing dentistry.
3 days doing dentistry. So here's what I want to do. I want to go to where basically you and I have 3 days where we do dentistry and 1 day where we just do hygiene checks and
consults.
So like a consult day kind of a deal. And where basically that's no production, essentially, virtually. And
no direct production,
right? What was crazy was it became my
most productive
most important day. Most important day ever.
It was the
I'm not giving it up.
Day.
Now we have more chairs than ever, and I'll have one day that will just be consults.
All right, so let's come back to this. So we had talked about, your mindset was let's wait, we'll get in the building, then we can bring somebody in. My said was just go through the exercise of what it would look like, and we had worked through some of this.
Even as far as like interviewing, because at the time we weren't even considering interviewing people, and you're like, dude, it may take you a year to find
the right person. It's a great thing. Now you don't have to make a decision. Now you literally can just interview and find the right person.
Right,
you know,
with no pressure.
Right. So now my first thought was, okay, you want to bring somebody in 4 days a week. That's full time at the end of the day.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
So where do we find 4 days?
Correct.
Okay. So we have Friday.
That's one.
Okay. That's one. And then my initial says, why don't you just both cut down to 3 days?
Right.
Okay. And so that's two and three.
Yep.
Right. So suddenly just by doing that, we've got three of the 4 days that we need to bring an associate in the current space. And I didn't say let's cut to 3 days and not work the fourth day. Let's make the fourth day your hygiene day, right?
Right.
So in other words, think about this. Now you're doing, I'm going to make up the days here. Mm-hmm. Rick's going to be working Monday and he's going to be focused on all his big cases where going to check hygiene is a hindrance clinically for good dentistry.
Right.
But Sully's there. He's dedicated to checking hygiene.
Yeah.
That gives Magna the opportunity to focus on speed, not having to get up, all of those things, correct?
I spend more time with the patient. I probably diagnose more dentistry.
And then Tuesday's the opposite. Sully's doing his big cases, and Rick's there to do the hygiene and to mentor the associate. You know, and then Wednesday's the crazy day. Like, it's all hands on deck. And then now Rick doesn't work, you know, whatever. Now you go to working Fridays, you take Mondays off, whatever it may be, to suddenly... It just, the puzzle pieces fit together to where you guys were able to, with creative thinking and a different mindset, were able to run three dentists out of eight chairs and essentially fund this building. Because now we went from, so I was mentioning that we went from 1.5, I say we, as
you were along the road. Yeah, most of
you're actually part of the we.
Yeah, I'm part of the we, I get that, but.
You're not equitable partner.
I don't win in any of it. I win a lot in this because it's, I don't win economically, but I win so much joy and pleasure and proudness.
You win your white children.
Yeah. So we saw the practice go from 1.5 to 3 million. Now we're going from $5,000 in rent to $25,000, $30,000 in rent. And that's a direct pay cut to you guys ultimately, okay, is how I looked at it. And now we've gone from, in the span of building the office and bringing in the associate, we've gone from 3 million to 4 million. Right. So now when you move here, the rent is already paid. I'm not saying it's prepaid, but you're not questioning where's the money coming from.
Well, and I've noticed it because, like, Dad and I have continued to make the same amount with our expenses significantly higher, right?
Yeah.
We're paying.
You're funding the mortgage. You're paying interest only and all
right.
that.
So all these things that we're paying, and it's like, well, gosh. And a lot of these are one-time expenses. TVs, things, but it's still these big expenses.
Adds up is 10, 20 grand in cash.
We're still not feeling that,
yeah.
Which is crazy.
And to me, the other part, to me, the long-term important part of that is, and I hope people are following along as we're talking about this, and what I mean by they funded it is they proved the concept. Number one, they proved that they need three dentists.
So let me show you that there's one part of this variable that's even more fun, because at this point, we're just jumping on, we're piling on.
Yeah.
January, we said we're going to have 5 hygienists in the new building.
Yeah.
So we go, okay. Let's add a 5th hygienist.
Because you proved to both of us that, like, okay, we could get creative.
We could do this.
Yeah. And when this is not even expanded hours yet outside of Fridays.
Yeah, we haven't gone.
Like, I'm like, why don't you go 7 to 5?
Right. So keep going, Dad.
So,
because we didn't want to have to get here and then grow our hygiene department.
So Sully goes, okay, we're going to let's hire a hygienist. Okay, how are we going to do it? So Sully works Monday through Thursday with Megan. I work Tuesday through Friday. But Friday gets to be is my go day, so I get to kind of by myself, double up. It makes me happy.
And then the hygienists we moved around to, so they had a Monday to Thursday and a Tuesday to Friday schedule.
Yeah, right. So we divvied up, and then we hired a hygienist, so she was able to fill in the days the other hygienist had given up to go
Monday and Friday.
Yeah,
and so we ended up where we asked Megan to go to 3 days
to do what we were doing,
right.
Go to a
so
consult.
So she
day
gives up Wednesday
for her
consult day, check hygiene day, admin day. So now we have a hygienist working in the doctor ops on Wednesday alongside us while she's doing overflow. He's got a chair. I've got a chair.
And the beauty of that, Magna could pop in and doing a
Megan's production. Megan's production has gone up.
Yeah.
Because she's diagnosing more, doing more.
So
you can do some level of same-day dentistry.
So now we got the hygienist to 3 days. And then lastly, the bonus here was our sterile tech is a retired hygienist who we asked to come back and do 1 day on that Monday to gain us the 4th day to where we're running 5 hygienists, full-time hygienists, out of 4 hygiene chairs in our current space.
So you don't need the new building in theory, right?
That's what was so crazy was I looked at Dad a couple weeks ago. I said, the crazy part is we don't need the new building yet.
I mean, if you stayed there, you're so profitable.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
don't even tell me that.
Well, but what we did, we put an ad out. Know how long it takes to get a 4th doctor. And our 4th doctor started and did 1 crown in the new building on the last day.
It's
3 mils.
It took him 3 mils, but that's all right.
But so again, so 1 year ago, the conversation was, we're going to add the next hygienist and the next dentist when we move to the new building. Today, day one in the new building, by the way, today, in my opinion, this is day one in the new building. For you guys, Monday's the day one in the new building. You're adding your 4th dentist and your 6th hygienist in the new building.
So when he got out of school and started in 2015, I had 7 employees.
Yeah.
We're moving over here with 20.
Yeah.
We were so backed up in that building, there was a line for the bathroom.
Well, you have to go through the consult room to get to the bathroom, but
yeah. I mean, it was, on some level, we kind of peaked too soon, a month or two too soon.
And so to me, the whole point in bringing all of this up is don't ever hinder your growth. Don't wait to go through the process. And you may have gone through the process and said it didn't work. And so now, to me, there's a level of critical thinking and creative thinking that's been instilled that no matter what, the answer is not it can't work. All right, let me see how it would work. And in my opinion, your dental lifestyle is better because now you're hustling 3 days a week instead of 4 days a week. You have a day where you're planting lots of good seeds.
So many seeds.
You know, and you've moved here and you've proven how you're going to pay for it. And what's lost in all of this is now, because as we all, any of us that have ever built anything new or built something, what we all know is there's always cost overruns or areas where we make, like, all right, let's cheap out on that, or let's not do that right now. And so along the way, as you're hitting 3, 3.1, 3.2, 3.3, 3.4, whatever the numbers are, you're like, okay, we can make that decision. We can go ahead and fit 10 chairs. Hey, we can go ahead and finish this space. We can go ahead and have this luxury.
Well, that flexibility, I have a saying that I say to the team all the same time is, I won't let spending money inhibit our growth. Yep. You know, and that may be adding a new X-ray sensor.
Yep.
The minute I hear that we're having a bottleneck,
mm-hmm. get
the X-ray sensor. The minute I hear we're having a bottleneck with this, you know, whatever it is, I get it. We refuse to be getting our own way.
Yeah.
On some level with some of those things. It's crazy.
It's an amazing story, and I hope that you listen to this whole thing, and I know it's long, and there's some ups and downs and peaks and valleys in every story, but there is so much good stuff in this. No matter where you're at in your career, whether you're solo and you want to bring in an associate, what Rick and I talked about at the beginning is so important. Whether you're an associate, thinking about where you want to go, what kind of practice you want to be in, there's so much in there for you. Whether that you're an associate, how you want to succeed and really integrate yourself into a practice, there's so many lessons there. As an owner who maybe hasn't funded retirement as well as they should have, there's some lessons there. You know, there's so many lessons along the way of how to become a good partner, where you have to, you know, where's the give and take in all of this. The mindset of replace yourself, you know, learning to get more stuff, learning to add and subtract to your building, and then proving the concept before you get there. Why wait to be successful? You know, whether it's the, you know, dollar, you know, decimal point versus comma thinking. There's so many lessons of the things that we're teaching at 3D Dentists, and that's what I try to get across. And it's not self-serving in a sense. I try to get across to people is just be. There's so much value in the mindset of just thinking it through. Critical thinking is what I keep calling it. Thinking through what would it look like to make that work. And so instead of moving in here at $2.5 or $3 million in revenue, you're moving in at $4 million in revenue. You're gonna quadruple or 6x your rent plus more, and you won't feel it. And it's a testament to, number one, it's a testament to you, Rick.
It is. It really is.
To the mindset. I mean, I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but I want to go through Al-Anon just so I can learn that. I mean, because I need that, because I'm and I say this very, very, very proudly and not so proudly. I'm not where you guys are at because I don't have your dad's mentality. That difference in our because I was you in 2011 is probably me today mentally.
And we joke all the time, if I came to work for you 5 years ago,
we would have failed. 1,000% we would have failed.
Tons of talent.
Yeah. If you came to work for me today, we'd do amazing.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you.
Yeah. We'd butt heads for sure.
But our perception's different now.
Yeah.
Probably because of a lot of what being around him. Yeah.
I would be so much farther along if I had your mentality.
Thank you.
I really would. I'd be double where I'm now. And I've done pretty well, you know, it's such a testament to you. And people think it's easy to bring in your son, daughter. People think it's easy to buy.
Consultants told us war stories.
Yeah. Well,
didn't they?
You think it's easy to buy land from family members?
Yeah.
You think it's easy to build a building next door to where you're at? I would say that's a negative, because every free moment you get, you want to be over here.
There were times where, like, they're like, dude, you have to come back.
There's some benefit of out of sight, out of mind a little bit, right? So many things that I just come here and I'm so so daggone happy for you guys and so proud of you, Rick. I'm so proud of you. Oh, my God. And Sully, I'm a little proud of you, too.
Thanks, Steve.
So anyway, thank you guys for tuning into this very long episode. I hope we get to keep this episode forever.
Point, yes. And it's just a rewrap from my standpoint. We got here because we continually invested in ourselves and technology.
Yeah.
When Sully got here, I pushed him in CE and technology. He pushed me farther in CE and technology. We continued to push that envelope. And that's what really got us to that next level and then the next level.
I always say technology is just a prop to help you make things easier. Mm-hmm. You know, cone beam's a prop for me to talk about sleep apnea. Cone beam's a prop to help me talk about dental implants. Cone beam's a prop to help me talk about missing dentistry. You know, technology, you know, pictures, like even things like the stupid TVs, the vertical TVs. It's a prop to have, you know, to subliminally have conversations with patients. You know, a hand mirror is a prop, you know, to help make discussions easier. It's technology makes things easier. You ultimately still have to kick the door open and make it happen. So everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to such a long episode. Who knows what'll come to it. If nothing else, Sully and Rick will have a memory for a lifetime and for the next generation. So
thank you.
Thank you guys so much.